Kevin.
Thanks. So thank you. As you heard, this book is a collection of, I guess, sort of ventriloquisms or something like that. They're takes on a set of trumpet players, some of whom are a little better known than others. So each of the pieces is titled with their the name or the sort of nickname of the trumpet player. So really, it's a kind of a suite here. thank you. And the collection opens with a kind of a prologue called Embouchure. Does anyone know what an embouchure is? That's it. There it was. Yeah. It's it's your chops. It's your, for a horn player. It's sort of the shape of your mouth and the way in which your mouth connects to the horn. So your embouchure. You can hear the French word bouche in there, for example. So that'll tell you what it is. So what I'll do is I'll read this first poem, Embouchure, that sort of sets things up, and then I'll read a selection of the little pieces that are voiced for each of the trumpet players. Okay. So here we go. Embouchure. You get as good lip service as you give. Chops will ever out the fake. The put-on line never cut grace notes from a sloppy wad of clams. Trued up, a well-flubbed phrase ought to betray nothing more than lacquered horn, the schwa blat of hand-polished open brass. Style takes care of its own. Chops make the rep. An off mouthpiece can cut you like shrapnel. Know the hard limits of your instrument. Work its righteous edges. Be the pro. Then come the call. Let rip a proper lick. Commit. Buddy. What happened was he wigged out utterly before that big time Edison could wax him proper like. No sense fighting facts. Race music took nothing like priority. So, next best thing, try picturing brash Charles gussied to the nines for some street parade. That notorious cornet rubbed flashy. One sepia tintype survives the slow rot of nitrates, history's soft sizzle. And there he is, tucked up with his band boys in front of a canvas drop cloth, ready to get outsized as horn folklore, the first. They said he could be heard 14 miles off. They said he always wore red undershirts. They said he drank. They said a lot of things. Some odd bits must be true. There lived a man whose name cut to the still quick, left behind by imaginary one-off jams, bygones. Sheet music curls like peeling wallpaper, like the lapels of moth-eaten, overexposed suits, foxed to its legible edge. The preservation societies pretend to remake songs long since curdled to mute, the damaged stuff of dirt-clogged, melt-mucked grooves. But truth to tell, each aftermath, half in love with deadness, spreads its rancid butter like a blurred shadow on his plain brown toast, the dark backwards of unrecorded time. Freddie. When Bolden broke, Keppard came next along, stepping up from the second line to lead, because he was so damned loud anyhow. The blowhard, with a lip like black wrought iron. Stuck near the stage, you leaned your chair way back or left before your ears started to bleed. What loose evidence there is says he did the first show tour, hauling his blared assets around all the out-city Orpheums. The white originals, Jelly Roll said, watered down Freddie's best licks in upscale saloons, cutting the earliest shellacks that got called jazz, scratching out history. So he knew records were a cheat for thieves or copycats and blew Victor off cold. A few years on, chops starting to go soft, and I've lost the rest of the poem. Oh, it happens. Freddie turns out okay, anyway.
Don't look in your prayer.
I know, that's it. He made a comeback, and he recorded some fine sides. You should check it out. Freddie Keppard. The one read, with Myth Mole, he had so many bad bands, he couldn't tell you half their names. Red Hot this and Louisiana that. They'd cut 24 records before his 30s hit, the salad days, those soft declining years of nearly no money and less lip. White types got to record, no matter how awful they sounded, since they made the rules anyhow. You pay, you play. Bix ripoffs, bunny clones were all over the place. Race bit into your voice like a crosshatch, scrawled with no ink, skin to metal nib, a slice of the good life nobody, not everybody, gets. He could have retired on a high. Instead, he sucked out the dark, jellied heart of songs, each corny stomp, until they withered pale. Johnny. The great unknown, he held his own a while before oblivion called him home. The word was, he could lay into a tune like Stink and make you think he'd made the whole thing up. So fierce a lip, so fanciful a lilt that jarhead had. They said he'd go places. Halfway to Ginny Gall, the shadows spoke. The coal-blacked eye of nothing looked under that flap of skin he called his heart, and saw an emptiness the size of New Orleans lurking there. Did he die of liquor, love? Hardly so dramatic. The narcotic lull of never having made much of much swam over him like ink, swallowed him whole. Erskine. The floor of the dance-mad Savoy Ballroom went wilder when Tuxedo Junction hit, the last tune called that night. No one goes home, came the word, till they played it one more time more. The Bama State Collegians wiped their mouths, soothing split lips and numbing embouchures, and did what they were told. Gone to his head, Dash muttered to Haywood, who nodded back. They looked at the ocean of dark bodies, that sweaty seethe, off-the-shoulder chiffons and rumpled zoots swaying hypnotically to yet another drunkard-up swing riff. After a while, it all sounded the same, but the boss only heard cash boxes ring. He fancied himself talented. His name splashed on marquees with that duff moniker, the 20th Century Gabriel, and talked himself into believing he could blow. He let Dud Bascom take the hard solos and concentrated on grand standing squeals, the show stealers. His high F warbled bad, but most crowds were too dipsy to notice. Loud was all he had. Even on the ballads, you measured the bombast in decibels. No use squawking, became the band motto, a seraphic wail. Lord of the dance hall, he still paid his boys well and let them play. Sure, we're artists. But if y'all don't want to starve, you give them people what they want. Sweets. A late photograph has him slicker-haired and glistening like a candy apple. Sweets drip sugar from the lip of his bent bell and stirred through Billy's pucker-up rhubarb a cool distilled syrup. Not that he'd gone soft on her or lost the taste for bitter fact, forgetting in music's glycerin pools the hard lessons of a life gone sour. He knew the score. But when the frog came by to cut a few ballads, those saccharine torch songs turned into more than icing crust on some producer's cupcake, every note a nastier dulcet. You'll catch more flies with Old Strop molasses than vinegar. Cat. Came on at the tail end of the big war, last of the real blasters. Finesse never his strong suit. He could roll and roar a line whenever Duke let him out of his cage, the 8 or 16 bars he was allowed. Like a panther, he hung back and then pounced when least you expected. Cootie got mad after all the top-end leads fell Cat's way, and he threatened to quit, but never did. El Gatto thought every half-lipped player ought to learn how to cruise the stratosphere a couple octaves up. Make yourself heard. Blow hard, blow high, blow loud, but blow, man, blow. That's it. It's a little quick. I think I should have improvised one when I dropped it there, but so it goes. Anyway, there you are. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Kevin.